My name is Alan Harbine, and I am Director of Christian Education and Youth at St. Luke Lutheran in Spokane. And I've been there for about 4 years working with youth programs at our church, and I also work with all the educational programs as well. Before that, I was at a church down in California in Grass Valley, and was there for 5 years. And then I was at a church in Puyallup for 2 years before that. So I think if I add it all up, I've been in youth ministry 11 going on 12 years. So I've been doing this for a while, and I find I really enjoy youth ministry. I think it's something that's really vital in a congregation. And so I'll share a few things that I've kind of picked up over the years, and maybe those things will be of help to you as you deal with youth ministry in your own congregations. In thinking of a title for this, I put down, is your congregation youth friendly, or is your church youth friendly? And I guess what I'm thinking about in that is how welcome do you make young people feel in your home congregations? I think in a lot of ways congregations can be kind of hostile places for young people. And I think it's important to kind of take a look at some of those things we may do without even thinking about it that would be difficult for young people. You know, we can talk about young people being teenagers and also for children as well. Primarily today, though, I think we'll deal with high school students and junior high school students. And then maybe if you have questions about younger kids, we can talk about that as well. To start with, though, I think it's probably important to define who we're working with, and so I want some help on that. Today I think we'll talk about primarily teenagers, and all of you have seen teenagers, you've observed them, maybe you have some at home. So I want you to describe to me some of the characteristics of a typical teenager. I'll write some of those on the board.
Energy.
Energy.
Impulsive.
Oh, really?
Social.
Okay.
Busy.
Okay. What else?
Obnoxious.
Obnoxious. Oh, yeah, they are.
It'd be negative, but.
Well, let's be truthful. Is that how you spell obnoxious? Mm-hmm. If not, that's okay.
Sensitive.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Self-conscious.
Uh-huh. I wrote down a list, and I didn't come up with a lot of these. Nice problem. Oh, well. Figure that out.
Determined.
That probably has other words that could be used in place of that as well. Yeah.
Okay. Hormonal.
What's that?
Hormonal.
Yeah.
Is that spelled right? Okay. What else?
At times apathetic.
Apathetic.
Needy.
Okay.
I think uncertain.
Uncertain.
Peer oriented.
Peers. Okay. Well, you guys are good at this.
Questioning.
Oops.
Having a lot of potential.
Potential. Okay.
Maybe this may be because of the youth I've worked with recently, but
especially in the young boys, there's a potential for a lot of anger.
Okay.
Or frustration, along with that, I guess.
I think what goes with that would be depression, because they're finding suicide rates are quite high in that age group.
That plugs into some other things here. I think that probably plugs into the hormonal one a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not really, so.
Okay. How do they look? Let's talk about how they look.
Unique.
Okay.
Unconventional. Yeah, they have different hair.
But I have a sense that, you know, I think we have to be careful about unique and unconventional, because mm-hmm. there is a sameness if you look at them as a group. Mm-hmm. They may not be respecters of tradition.
Yeah.
But there are some very clear kind of standards that they all, and they're yeah. real conformists within their yeah. group.
Yeah, I want to be different just as long as I'm like everybody else.
Yeah. Different in the same way that everybody else is.
Yeah.
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 So conformity too.
They're constantly seeking acceptance and mm-hmm. Their self-image is just being formed. Mm-hmm. So that's why the peer group is so mm-hmm. dominant in their lives.
Real self-aware.
Does one of those words cover that? Questioning, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And self-conscious, maybe.
Self-conscious. Well, that usually has to do with more embarrassing things.
Uh-huh.
Low self-esteem. Or even high self-esteem.
So self-esteem
is aggravated in that age group. They're expanded upon.
Okay.
I think they seek stimulation. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that sense of they're easily bored, but it's got to do with they're looking for a fix, kind of, almost. Uh-huh. They want things that shake them, looking for mountaintop experiences all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Easily bored? Mm-hmm. Put that down?
Mm-hmm.
So how many of you are working with teenagers at home? So you've got knowledge of this from people at home. A couple of things too that I put down. I put idealistic, because that's something that I've just really noticed.
Is, you don't understand how something can't just happen.
I mean, you know, it needs to be done. Let's go do it. The world's polluted, let's change it. I have some kids that are just super idealistic, and I just love it in my group at home, and they kind of fire up the rest of them. Let's see. Language is another. They talk a different language than we do.
I learned really, real early that I do not try and talk that language, because I look
stupid when I talk that language, so... But they have a different language than we do. What else did I come up with? Music is another. Music's just really important. Anything else that you can think of?
Food.
Food?
It has to be the right food. Pizza, hamburgers,
hot dogs.
Yeah, yeah. The crummier for you, the better.
I think they're smart.
More grease and sugar.
I think they're smart, but I don't think they're really visionary. In other words, they don't always look forward to see what they're going to, what the end result of their actions will be.
Yeah.
They seem to be rather short-sighted.
Yeah.
Which could be self. We didn't have self-centered there, but we had self-conscious. Not all. I mean, these don't fit all teenagers.
Sure. I think as a rule, though, those are definitely part of, if you look at teenagers as a group, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think when you look at all of those things together, too, teenagers become kind of scary. And I think that we as churches get a little scared by teenagers, because they are all of these things. And whatever is a part of a teenager's being is right on the surface, generally. You know, adults can kind of hide some of those things, maybe a part of us. But kids, they're right up on top. So I think a lot of times churches are really kind of scared of the teenagers that they have in there. They don't quite know how to deal with them. So in a lot of cases, churches just don't deal with them, or like to think that they're dealing with issues that the teens need help in, but don't really deal with them at all. The theme for this summer is created in the image of God. And I think that we need to realize that these teenagers that have all these weird things going on are really created in the image of God. And some of these things that are part of a teenager's being are part of that image of God that they're created in. And that some of those things that we get really scared about and don't understand are the very things that we need to bring out in our congregations. They're things like that idealism, their energy, just some of the things that are really part of their being can really be an asset to our congregations. Let's take a change of pace here just for a minute. Check my notes and make sure I'm taking the right change of pace here. Okay. Let's take a look real quick. Remembering some of these things that are kind of a part of what makes up a teenager, let's take a look at some ways that the congregations might be kind of an unfriendly or a hostile place for you. What are some ways that congregations can be kind of a tough place for young people?
Structure,
yeah. Yeah. If you're a Lutheran, we have a set order of worship, and most churches tend to follow that order of worship Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, and they don't vary from it very much week from week. Yeah.
The music also isn't their kind of music.
It's classical, isn't it? Yeah.
They tend not to be included in
decision-making. Oh, yeah. All of the content is adult-oriented. I mean, the sermons don't draw from examples or situations that they would typically encounter. I'm in trouble.
Any pastors here?
She's my pastor, so I'm in trouble.
Oh. I don't agree with him.
Okay. Whether true or not, there's definitely a perception of that. I know that on the part of kids. But sometimes there's a sermon that they'll listen to, but it's tough in between those sermons. Mm-hmm. What else?
The worship services can be boring to them.
Okay. One of the things I see, and maybe it's just living in Los Angeles, which is the ultimate example of that, but they often come from different communities. So you're requiring them to create a new peer community rather than one that they're with all the time. I mean, a school group is a natural grouping, but you draw people from six communities, and you have to overcome all the existing communities that are there. Where I grew up in a small town, and that church community was my peer community. So today, I think there's the dispersion makes it harder to create a peer community at a congregation in a lot of places. And it's safer if all of my friends are there.
You bet. It's the same thing here, you know, at camp. Yesterday I ran around with one of the other kids trying to get kids to come to
minors and junior minors thing. And once they got to know another person, they did fine. But they're all from so many different places, it's really tough to work together. Yeah. What else?
I think they're ignored sometimes within the whole community. Sort of like second-rate citizens of the group or something. Mm-hmm. I don't think we give them their full.
Sometimes we tolerate them. Waiting, you know, they're sort of in limbo. We're waiting until they become something, you know, and they're sort of in that in-between time. Yeah.
Sometimes churches set up programs to meet the needs of the youth, but by doing that, there's actually making them even more separated from the rest of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So that they have their youth programs, yeah, and they're not involved with the other parts of the church. There's no intergenerational coordination going on. There's no mingling of the ages.
I think high school kids also need to feel needed. And I don't know how well we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Really letting them know that we need them and the gifts that they have.
You almost have to be intentional in that, yeah. Just like you do with adults. You know, sometimes you have to seek out people to get involved.
Well, and I also think, I think there is a fear on both sides with any age of children, but especially teenagers. Maybe easier to interact with a five-year-old. We are really reluctant to approach teenagers, and they equally are reluctant to approach us. And if you don't have a lot of opportunities to break those boundaries down, mm-hmm, you can be standing side by side on the lawn and we'll never say anything to each other, mm-hmm, other than, oh, hi, you know. That's where do we go from there?
Sure. We're scared of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they need their own space in the church.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, I mean physical space where they can just relax and be themselves, decorate a room so that they're comfortable.
Yeah. Our youth room is one of those rooms that the property committee comes, you know, it's in the attic. It's one of those spaces nobody wants to have a Sunday school class in, but they love it. Property committee comes up there and takes a look around, they shake their heads and walk on past, you know. But the kids love it, yeah.
I know in our congregation for a while among the older people, it was, well, we never hear from teenagers until they want us money for a bus trip somewhere. In other words, they want to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't feel, I think this integration programs should be really expanded upon in every congregation, at least in our area. But we're always called upon when there's a car wash or some fundraising thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the elderly people take that really.
All they want
that.
Is your money. Yeah.
It's kind of like a lot of the elderly people, mm-hmm, really do want to be approached by the younger ones.
Mm-hmm.
Some of kind of in the middle group will go up and say, hi, you're such and such's daughter or something. But the really old, and we have a large older congregation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a third at least in their 80s or beyond.
Sure. In a way, it's probably not visible what the youth do in the church other than raise money. Maybe that communication.
Well, they do a worship service as an acolyte, mm-hmm, so they are very present in the worship, mm-hmm, service, but not on a one-on-one,
mm-hmm,
again, in the integration of programs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sort of relates to the decisions made by others, but I sense in the congregations I've been in that the youth are dependent and wanting to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of that. Even if there's a youth representative on the council, they've still got to come and ask for the money to put a couch in or,
mm-hmm,
whatever it is. There's an element of dependency that,
sure,
that's imposed on them in an organization that, mm-hmm, adults don't have.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think also oftentimes there are expectations put on the youth as part of the congregation, like, we've given you this money to go to Sanatorium or something, so now what are you going to do for us?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's necessarily that expectation of adults.
I don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think that in a lot of ways, all of our churches in some way are places that are not really youth-friendly. Even the churches that have the largest, most thriving youth programs have aspects that are kind of hostile toward young people. I know in my last congregation, the one thing that we really noticed at Inn is that if ever there was a mess left in the kitchen, or if ever there was a stain put on the new carpet, guess whose fault it was? Yeah. And so they're very protective of their property. Well, I think that we as congregations need to be concerned about our youth for a number of reasons, and need to be concerned about how we treat them, and I guess how we relate to them is probably a better word than how we treat them, how we relate to our young people. Because I really do think that the world's a different place than it was when I was a teenager and the rest of us in this room were teenagers. Just watching what high school kids go through today, I really think that it is harder to grow up today. And I think that the more help that we can give them in the congregation, the better off we all are. Sometimes people think that, we need to relate well to young people because of the church of tomorrow. Well, that is true, but they're also the church of today as well. And so I think that, you know, there's some good examples in Scripture of how young people are valued. Jeremiah was a young person. There's some wonderful quotes in there that you can give kids. You know, don't say that I'm only a youth. For to all to whom I send you, you shall go, and blah, blah, blah. But basically building up Jeremiah, and Jeremiah was someone chosen by God. Even though he was a young person, someone chosen to do something amazing. We can look at Paul and how Paul treated Timothy. And I think that's a good example of how we should nurture the young people in our church. Paul took Timothy under his arm and basically discipled Timothy, if you will, into being a responsible adult. So I think young people are people that we do need to be aware of. I mentioned that it's harder to grow up today. Some of the ways that I think that it's harder for teenagers today is I really think that the media is a big part of kids' lives today. And I don't think that the examples that the media gives to kids are necessarily good. In fact, I'd say that in a lot of ways the media influence is definitely bad. Also families. Family systems aren't what they used to be. The family systems of the 50s and 60s are definitely not in place today. Half the kids maybe not half in the congregation I'm at, but probably a third of the kids that I work with in the congregation I'm at are either in single-parent homes or else the parents have divorced and remarried. And that's something different. I don't remember very many of my friends whose parents were divorced. They all lived with mom and dad, and that's something different. Also, I think society, the rules of society are different today. It used to be pretty clear-cut what was acceptable and what was not acceptable in society. And there are a lot of areas today that are really have become gray areas instead of black and white. And I think that we need, as a church, to be able to help kids to define what is right and what is wrong. And even if there are areas that are indeed gray, we do need to help kids find the right answers for themselves. I think also we need to be concerned about kids in our church, because I think that if we involve our youth, that their involvement adds richness to the congregation. As I said before, they're part, they're created in the image of God, and they have aspects of, there are things that they can add to a congregation that adults cannot. You know, we mentioned energy, for one, is one area. Their idealism is another area. There's just a number of areas that they can add, or a number of things they can add to a congregation that adults may have a harder time with. And practically, too, somebody always wants to hear about the practical reasons for why you should be concerned about youth. You know, one of the things I've noticed is in the congregations I've worked at, congregations that have good youth programs are congregations that grow. And I think that that that's something to be aware of. That's something that there are families that are looking for strong youth programs, and you may be able to bring them into your Christian fellowship by having a good youth program. Okay, let's talk about some ways that we can be more youth friendly. I think what I'll do, so I think I'll just go ahead and share with you a few things that I thought about, and then let's share a few things that I may not have mentioned. I think we talked about how sometimes kids think that church is really boring, because every time they go there we do the same thing. We sing the same liturgy, we do hymns that are all basically classical music. Maybe we can vary from time to time the songs that we sing. Maybe we can do a liturgy a little bit differently. One of the things that I think is really special about coming to Holden is I like the different liturgies. In making that comment, I also have to be aware of the fact that there are people that come to a Lutheran church because they like the liturgy and they like the predictability of worship. And so there's a balance there. And finding that, striking that balance is important, and sometimes it's difficult.
How do you feel about the having a completely separate worship experience for the teenager, college age group?
I don't think it's good to separate them out. I don't think that's the way to go, because I think we need to, we're a church, and a church is people of all different ages and people coming from different backgrounds and whatnot, and we need to be one. I think that there are those adults too that would like to have a different worship style in some congregations. Not all congregations are like that, I suppose. That some congregations there may be people that would like a contemporary style worship also.
How do you feel about an occasional experience of worship together that could be completely created by them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think youth services are really important. I think they're important for a number of reasons, because I think it's important for them to learn about what goes into a worship service. When we do a youth service, we talk about worship, and we talk about the elements that need to go into that worship service. And what it does is that when the pastor's doing service at a later time, it helps the kids say, oh yeah, there's this part of the worship, there's this part, and there's this part. I remember that. But it helps them to learn about worship. Also, I think it's a good experience for kids to get up and preach. They have things to say, and I think that sometimes coming from a young person, what they have to say means a lot more. We did a youth service about a year ago, and people were crying when they left. And, you don't see that in Lutheran churches very often, people in tears. But that was really neat, I felt really great about that. But sometimes I think coming from a young person, it has a different impact. And I think it's a good experience for them to sit down and write a sermon. It makes them appreciate what the pastor has to go through on a weekly basis. And it also helps them pull their thoughts together, deeper thoughts, and be able to express those. I think it's good. I think you can include them in your worship service also. Young people, a lot of them are in bands, a lot of them are in choirs at school, and have some really neat talents that they can offer. We had a little guy who's probably in, fourth grade, I think, Matt Ebel? Fifth grade. But he plays, one of those electronic keyboards, and he played his own rendition of Amazing Grace, and he's done that a couple times. It's just great. You see this little kid up there playing music for the church. And, that's his way of sharing with the congregation, and, he gets a big kick out of that. You can just pull a lot of different musical talents in with your young people. Involve kids in ushering. If your church is like our church, finding ushers on a week-to-week basis is kind of hard. Maybe you can involve a father and a son kind of a team. But that's one way to involve them. Also joining the church choir. We talked about music, but actually joining the choir. Opening your choir up. A lot of times that's the hard part in our church, is our choir being open to new members that are a little different than they are. But having young people in the choir. We mentioned sermons. I think sermons, we have a children's sermon for the little kids, and then we expect that all young people from age, or all people from age, probably 10 years old,
include something in their sermon that all people in that broad, broad age span can relate to. That's a hard job. I'm sure you can understand that. But that's something we can probably be aware of. Youth on committees is another thing that I think is important. Involve your young people in your social ministry committee at your church. Maybe involve them in your worship and music committee at your church. Just all the different committees that you have at your church, open those up to young persons as well. How many people have church councils that have a young person on the church council? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have a young person on our council too, and it's really neat for that person to be able to see how the church functions in a business sense, and also bring that back to the youth officers and kind of share what's happening in the church. If there's financial problems, share that. Whatever the problems might be able to share that, both the problems and also the good things that are happening that kids may not see. I think that's helpful to have a person on council. You know, you have to pick the right person though, because church council meetings can be terribly boring, even for adults. It's not my favorite place to be. Involve them in the stewardship committee. I think it's important for kids that, you know, they have more disposable income than anybody. And I think it's really important that we involve those people that are making decisions about how they spend their allowance, how they spend money that they're earning at jobs. I think it's important that we help them to learn about stewardship and learn about setting a portion aside for God. And so most churches I've been a part of, unless somebody actively gets in there and pushes it with the stewardship committee, the kids are not involved in that. I think when we talk about kids, it should be anybody from confirmation age and above should be encouraged to pledge. Someone mentioned a youth room, a place in the church, a physical place in the church where they can be. I think that's really important, that they have a place that they can go in and crash. You know, bring in some old sofas, let them paint the place. Make it their own. I think that's really important. They have that place. Maybe give them a page in the newsletter. If your youth group meets often, give them a page in the newsletter. Someplace where they can look when the newsletter comes out, so they can see what's happening for them in the church. Confirmation is another area. It's a real sensitive area because that's one of the areas that I think most pastors have a real tough time in. And I think paying good attention to how confirmation ministry is happening in your church, getting involved yourself, is a great thing to do, because I think that in a lot of congregations we lose young people right after confirmation. And I think that if we can give them a positive experience in confirmation, that's all the better. Sunday school. I've seen churches that stop, that don't have Sunday school classes for children above 8th grade. They have adult classes and kind of assume that maybe the high school kids will go to the adult classes. That usually doesn't happen. You know, have a class for junior high and high school. And also have a youth group. Even if your youth group just meets, four times a year, have a youth group. Have some sort of a group that of Christian kids that your kids can identify with in your church. What are some other ideas, or do you have any comments on that?
By youth, you're talking up until what, 18, 20?
I think up through high school. You know, if you've got, the problem with involving college students in a high school youth group, you know, you can give them leadership responsibilities, and I think that's good. But what they're experiencing at a junior college or being out in the work world is a lot different than what high school kids are going through. And I don't think it's a real good mix there often.
I'd like to see an intergenerational Bible study.
Sure.
In our congregation, because we know many times, we've tried it a number of times, and they always try to get a seasoned Bible learned supposed person to lead it. And we know that the youth have different insights, and they mm-hmm. see things so much differently to do, and sometimes so much clearer even. They're mm-hmm. not buried under all this other stuff. like experiences even.
Sure.
And I think we need to, that'd be a wonderful way to open up the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try again.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to see if we can get one.
Sure, sure.
And age groups. And,
I think it's
like they're
great.
Doing their things and we're doing ours, and then sometimes we come together, but that's difficult mm-hmm. to put.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't even know if they want to. Now, are you a teenager or in the teen group?
No.
You. Yeah, you guys are closer to it than I am, surely.
Mm-hmm.
Do the youth, are they as concerned about this intermingling as we are about it, I wonder?
I think so. I think our church has done like intergenerational mm-hmm. events, and it's been real popular.
I think you find it more in the older kids than you do in the younger kids, the upper high school kids.
I think you have the fear thing. I mean, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, and part mm-hmm. of me is saying, at the same time, for kids to feel comfortable, they need some place to practice and to try things out before they try them on adults.
Mm-hmm.
They need to do some kind of sermon equivalent to their own group
mm-hmm.
that somebody says, hey, why don't you develop that into a sermon? Or maybe they need to lead a Bible study that somebody then says, you know, we're doing an intergenerational event. Would you two be willing to lead that event there? So, you know, we talked about their sense of being scared of each other and mm-hmm. their sense of lack of self-confidence to really enable that. I mean, you'll have the exceptional one who'll say, sure, I'll do it and can do the job, but to make it safe, I think you have to give them some places to practice mm-hmm. and build their confidence. And then to say, okay, how about if we take this to the adult group
mm-hmm.
and let's let them struggle with it with us and see how their insights are different mm-hmm. or something, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think also along that same line, I think it's important to have young people actively involved in running their own group. You know, learning those leadership skills so that they do feel comfortable being a leader.
And the struggle that I've seen in the church of intergenerational and intercultural, cross-cultural things is that by and large, the dominant group tends to do those things in ways where they retain control.
Mm-hmm.
And the message is pretty clear that we would like you to come on our terms and mm-hmm. within our rules and our expectations. So we'll pick the leader, why don't you come to the Bible study? Or mm-hmm. we'll pick the topic, but we'd like your insights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a natural thing that you have to fight against all the time.
Yeah.
Is how is it that we are really open and flexible enough to include them the way they want to be included and to share power and ideas with them mm-hmm. rather than letting them participate in our agenda?
You know, that fear, you know, I think a lot of that fear can be broken down. Maybe instead of doing something like a Bible study together, doing something fun together, mm-hmm. you know?
Maybe just a discussion group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know,
Volleyball challenge
we did last week, that was fun. Yeah. You know, groups I worked with, we've challenged every group in the church, I think, except for the women's group, you know. Maybe we should do that next time. But you challenge your church council to a softball game. We've done that before, and that's fun. They let us win, you know. Challenge the parents to get together for bowling or for volleyball. But I think that people, those walls are broken down through doing fun things together.
Then you can say, come to this, and
you bet.
Feel safer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did see a real barrier breaker when we had the homeless families in our church for 2 weeks straight. It was an all-denomination homeless shelter program. And we asked the youth to come out to help, mm-hmm. and we were just amazed by the maturity and the insight and the sensitivity of these kids. They were just mm-hmm. gorgeous with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really a beginning of how many talents we have been overlooking.
Mm-hmm.
We know they're musical talents, and they play volleyball and softball and all these things. But we were starting to see that they're very mature, and they're very up on the issues at the time,
mm-hmm.
and very much want to be involved. And they're willing to be right there in the trenches with you.
Yeah.
Right there face to face with the person, holding mm-hmm. the baby, helping the mother, talking mm-hmm. to the father. And that was a real real wonderful experience, and we'll be doing that again this winter.
You know, as we talked about before, kids are idealistic, you know, and that's something to plug into. Yeah. I found that when I've taken kids to nursing homes or when I've taken them to do various social ministry type of things, if they're, you know, if they're prepared well, you know, we talk about what's happening here, they're just wonderful. And they can really do a lot more than an adult could do, I think. Teaming them up with I think, senior citizens especially, they have so much in common with senior citizens, especially nursing home residents, because they both the seniors and the youth, you know, neither one are in total control of their lives anymore. You know, the senior citizens have their children looking out for them now, and the high school kids or the young, you know, the teens have their parents. And so both are kind of dependent and are limited in a lot the same ways. So it's kind of an interesting mix to get them two together. Let me share with you just a few excuses that I hear often from people that don't feel that we should start a youth program, or don't feel that there's a need to work very much with the young people in the church. First one I hear is, well, we don't have very many kids. We've only got a couple kids in our church. And you know, I think that churches have a lot more kids than they really realize that they have. The first church the second church I was at down in Grass Valley, California, you know, I went down there and there were 8 kids, you know. But, you know, behind those 8 kids, back in the bushes, you know, there were probably 20 more kids back there that, you know, I had to go out and pound on the door and invite them to come and you know, try and actually find them so that they could be a part of the church life. And so I think a lot of times that's too easy an excuse. Another one I hear is, well, the budget's too tight. We can't afford to add, you know, $1,000 for youth ministry. We can't afford to bring a part-time youth director or whatever into the church. So we just don't have enough money for that. Well, you know, I think that if the parking lot needed resurfacing, you know, we'd come up with $5,000 to do that. You know, there's sort of a, when there's a will, there's a way. And I really believe with youth ministry, when you talk about money, I think if you pay attention to youth ministry in your church, the money will come through new families that are a part of your church. That's happened where we've been. So another excuse is, we can't find anyone to work with our youth. A real neat tactic that I use is I encourage the youth to go ask the person to work with them. You know, having kids come up to you and say, would you please be our leader? Boy, that's powerful. You know, that we do that with our Sunday school teachers, and they usually don't say no. And you know, we get good ones that way too, ones that the kids really like. It's never worked before. I think that's kind of the standard excuse throughout the church, is that, well, we've tried that before and it's never worked. I've got a few tips for those of you that might be interested in how many of you have youth groups in your church? Okay. How many of them are really flourishing well? Let me just share with you a few tips for getting a youth program off the ground. All 3 churches I've been at have never had youth workers before I came. And so this is kind of the area that I kind of had some expertise in, starting from scratch. When you're looking at starting a youth program, I think it's really important to start with the junior high. High school kids, especially juniors and seniors, are already pretty well set in their ways. If there hasn't been something for them before, chances are they're not going to want to participate unless they've been really active in the church already. But, you know, really focus on those junior high school kids and give them a good experience, and then you can bring them up through high school and in a good program. Plug into synod and regional events. I'm the Synod Youth Committee chairperson in Eastern Washington, Idaho, and so I have to plug this sort of thing in here. But, you know, there's There's activities that the Synod puts on in the Northwest. Here we have wonderful leadership training events. Let's see, last year was on Flathead Lake and over at PLU. This year it'll be at, I think, LBI and at Coeur d'Alene Lake at Camp Luther Haven. But really neat events. They're four-day events where you send kids in your congregation that you identify as leaders. And you send those kids to this thing for 4 or 5 days and they learn leadership skills. And it's really a wonderful opportunity. Also, we have our regional and Synod youth gatherings. The next one is in Spokane over Thanksgiving if you're in the Northwest here. And I know down in Region 2, they have wonderful events also along the same lines. But plug into those events. You know, even if you don't have a group that meets often, you know, plug into those events because that'll, you know, it's a way for you to get those kids together and build some sort of sense of community. Also have good resources. I think that, you know, gosh, when I started in this over 10 years ago, there weren't that many books out about youth ministry. And, you know, there's just a ton of them out now. And one publishing house that I can recommend to you without reservation is called Youth Specialties. And they just have all sorts of good stuff. A couple that I really recommend, and I'm going to buy for Holden Village is Creative Socials and Special Events. That's a great one. It gives you ideas for things to do with your youth, and they all follow different themes. So that like I think I got Yuck Night out of there, where you have play all sorts of yucky games all in one night, just get really messy, and then finish off with a water fight. Then you do a Bible study along the lines of how Christ has cleaned us, you know, that we're cleansed from our sin. And so it kind of ties the Bible study in with the goofy thing that you're doing. Let's see, hamburger bash or something like that. And you do, I think the Bible study for that one ties in with how we, a lot of times we stack priorities onto our lives, and just like we stack more and more onto our hamburger, we're stacking more and more priorities until you can't even tell that there's hamburger in there anymore. And so it's really a neat one because it's so theme oriented and gives you good ideas for also doing Bible studies. So there are devotions as well.
How do you access that publishing house?
And
where do you list or write to them?
I think that Augsburg stocks a lot of their stuff. If you can't get it through Augsburg, go to a Christian gift store and ask about any of the stuff through Youth Specialties, and they'll have a catalog there, or else they'll be able to get that. I ordered that one through the bookstore in Spokane just recently. Another one is Fun and Games through Youth Specialties, and that's just games that you can play with the group, kind of break down walls and have a good time with one another. In addition to resources, I think it's really important that kids have a hand in picking the leaders, as I said. Also, super important, have fun. I think that if nothing else happens in your youth group, but the kids get together and have a good sense of community, I think you've done something really good. Those kids will feel good about the church and will stay later in life, I think. I think it's really important to have a good time together. A lot of times we feel really responsible that we need to preach and teach those kids. But I think that my philosophy is that you sell the fun and then you sneak up on them with the gospel. And I think that that's a good style of ministry, that kids want to have fun, but a lot of times you can learn a lot through that fun time that you're having with one another. Emphasize building relationships in your group. A lot of the kids that are active in the group that I work with now are friends at school now. And they're kids that probably wouldn't have been friends except that they have that common tie with youth group. Meet regularly. Even if you can only meet once a month, that's great. You know, that's something. And let the kids plan that stuff. You know, give them an active role in it. Last week, even up at Holden, when we had all these kids that didn't have any common background at all. We talked about having this challenge, you know, volleyball challenge with their parents. And I couldn't believe it. These kids just really got behind it. And they were making announcements at lunchtime and dinner time, and they were putting up signs and stuff. And it was just great to see that they were really getting behind it and really taking charge of it. In addition to meeting regularly, don't cancel things. I think that's a good policy for just about any group that you start. Never cancel, because then they start to wonder about whether it's going to happen next time. And you know, they start to question whether things are going to happen after all. Any comments? Yeah.
I just might share a role model that our church has adopted. I'm from Seattle, and there are 5 cluster churches that have hired, you probably know Craig Johnson, because he's from Spokane, but most recently. And anyway, so we hired a youth pastor, and then he meets, starts with the 5th and 6th graders, and he meets with them at least once a month, and then he has the junior high ages, and then he has the high school ages, and he meets weekly with the high school, and I think it's like bi-monthly with the junior high kids. And this summer they've done a lot of different things. I have a junior high age child, and they went and bicycled to San Juan's for a week. And I was really surprised. My children have been eager to go, even though they didn't know people from all the other churches. Interestingly enough, the kids in Seattle are so diversified in high schools that even amongst our own church, they don't go to the same high schools. And so the way they actually could find more friends at one of their schools, I think, by going to this particular setup that we have. But he always encouraged them to bring a friend, too. And so that's been a really unique way. That's been so powerful that these kids, like my daughter, would bring a non-church friend. And these kids would really enjoy the activities. And so they'd start coming, and lo and behold, you know, who knows? Their family may end up showing up. But we had, you know, the excuse, well, there's a few kids, and our previous pastor really didn't feel that his gift was in youth ministries. And so this was one way that our congregation found of solving that particular problem. Mm-hmm. And it's worked well for us.
Yeah, I know Mike Stottinger, who was the first person, I guess, in that role.
Could be. We just started a year and a half ago, and Woody Carlson at that time.
Yeah, I know Woody. Yeah, that's a model that you know, the Lutheran magazine did an article on that a few years back, on that program congregations. But I think that's an excellent way, especially if there are a number of congregations in a kind of a tight geographical area, that no one congregation can afford to hire a youth worker. I think that's an excellent way to bring a youth worker into a congregation. It really is good.
We're using a similar thing, that our kids wanted to have their own group too, so they meet once a month as their own group, and then once a month with the conference area group. Mm-hmm. So they have because they're a very tiny group.
Sure.
On their own, but they still wanted their own.
Yeah, and you need to have that congregational identity too. You know, this is where my family worships. Yeah.
But you can do some things in a larger group
that are
harder to pull off.
Yeah.
Our kids kind of use Sunday morning, you know, Sunday school. That's their group time, and then this other group.
Yeah, we've talked for a long time in Spokane about doing a one youth group in the summertime for North Spokane, where we have big events in the summertime rather than most of the churches having real small events, you know, in the summer when so few kids are around. Yeah, it's a good a good way to go.
How effective is a long-term goal, like, for example, in building a group, starting to work towards going to one of the national events?
I think a goal is really great. You know, in our program, we do a big summer trip every year, and so that kind of provides a focal point that you're looking toward. And you have to do things together to get ready for that thing. Like if you're in a national gathering, you got a lot of money you have to raise, so you know, you're kind of forced to work together. And so I think it's great to have a long-term goal. And I also think it's great to have something big that you're doing together. You know, whether you're going to a national gathering or whether you're going to go out and spend some time, you know, a few days at a lake place or whatever.
this summer, our youth group, we rented 2 houseboats on Lake Roosevelt, and we went houseboating for 5 days and then worked on a servant project after that. But it was really good to spend that much time together because it really unifies the group of kids that are there. So I think it's good. You mentioned staffing, and I want to just talk to you just a little bit about that. I'm a paid staff person, I'm a lay person, and but I'm hired on staff full time. And I know a lot of congregations are, you know, think about, well, should we hire a staff person or not? And so I just want to give you a few things that I really believe strongly. If you're hiring someone on staff, or if you're looking for a volunteer even, try and find someone that can be there for the long term. After 2 years with a group, that's when good things can really start to happen with a youth group. That's when you've built the rapport with the kids so that they trust you and kind of know where you're coming from. And good things happen after that 2 year period of time. A lot of congregations hire interns to do youth ministry. I speak out of personal experience here because my congregation in California hired an intern after I left, and you get an intern for a year and then they're gone, and you may end up with an intern that has no desire to do youth ministry at all. And so it's a miserable way to do youth ministry in a congregation. So if your congregation, you know, is thinking of going that way, I would really discourage you not to. And once again, if you are going to hire someone, involve the kids in the selection process. You may be surprised who you get. And the congregation I worked with in California has now gone from the intern program to hiring a full-time person for youth ministry again. And the person that the adults least expected them to like was the one that they liked the best. And so I think involving the youth in that process is really, really healthy. Well, hopefully I've answered a few questions for you. Are there any more comments that you might have?
One of the things I have a difficulty with, and I was a part of it as a high school kid, where if you're going to go to events, you spend all your time raising money. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think that is what mm-hmm. we should be telling our kids church is. It's a place mm-hmm. where you do all this fundraising to get yourself to go mm-hmm. somewhere.
Sure.
You know, and how you... where our kids want to go down to Mexico to the program through the Lutheran camping where they help for a week down there, which sure. is a wonderful thing to do. And it is expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to teach them stewardship too, that we all give to the budget of the church, and then the budget can support different kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And, but you hear so many people talk about their churches doing fundraisings. Mm-hmm. You know, and car washes and bake sales.
Yeah, and when you're doing fundraising too, I think the congregation should bear the bulk of the responsibility there. You know, I have a problem with going out to the community and asking the community to support the church's activities. Yeah, and you know, those are tough questions you have to answer. And I guess what it is prioritizing. You know, is this really an important event? Will it really accomplish the goals that we want accomplished? And if it is, go for it, or else add it to your church budget.
Mm-hmm. True, and there needs to be balance there. Mm-hmm. There needs to be other activities besides.
Yeah. We're only allowed to do fundraising every other year in our church. And I've got a large youth program and a fairly large congregation. But that's the deal we struck up with the stewardship committee, is that we won't do it except every other year.
How big is your youth group?
You want the numbers on paper, you want the real numbers?
Well, you say large, and I don't know if that's...
Well, on paper, there's about, let's see, there's about 75 high school kids on paper, about 30 junior high. In actuality, about half come on a regular basis. Mm-hmm.